May 15th, 1988. Greenwood, South Carolina. After spending the evening at a basketball court, 8-year-old Malakia Logan heads back towards her apartment but never arrives. 2 years later, a skull is found in a wooded area about 35 miles away, and DNA testing eventually identifies it as belonging to Kia. In 2002, a suspect named Charles Wade Hampton is charged with Kia's murder after he allegedly confesses to the crime, but since there is no other corroborating evidence against him, the charges are eventually dropped, and the case continues to remain unsolved. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today we're going to be exploring an odd cold case involving the disappearance and death of a child, the 1988 murder of 8-year-old Malakia Logan. The victim was known to her friends and family as Kia, and went missing during a very narrow window of time in which she was making a 300-yard trip from a basketball court at a park to her apartment complex. Her skull would later be found in a wooded area 35 miles away and eventually identified via DNA testing, but while the rest of Kia's remains were never found, it seemed apparent that she was the victim of an abduction and a homicide. It appeared that this case was going to have a resolution in 2002 when a convicted sex offender named Charles Wade Hampton was charged with Kia's murder. While he supposedly confessed to the crime, he would soon recant it, and after 4.5 years, the state ultimately decided that the evidence wasn't strong enough to take Hampton to trial and drop the charges against him. Now, what's particularly frustrating about this case is that Hampton has made confessions to a whole bunch of different crimes, including the abductions and sexual assaults of a number of young girls, which took place in South Carolina and Georgia during the mid-1990s, as well as a couple of other murders besides Kia's. However, the problem is that DNA testing has ruled out Hampton as a suspect in some of the crimes he confessed to, so while he is undoubtedly a criminal, the authorities really can't be certain what exactly Hampton has or has not done. Since there is no DNA evidence in Kia's case, Hampton has never officially been cleared, so he could theoretically be charged with the crime again if new evidence ever surfaced. But the whole situation with Hampton has really muddied the waters here, so on this episode, we're going to try and figure out what actually happened to this poor 8-year-old girl. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. As our Patreon page currently has around 70 exclusive bonus episodes in our archives, which are not available on a regular feed. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the murder of Malakia Logan. Our story begins in 1988 in Greenwood, South Carolina, a town located in Greenwood County which had a population of just over 20,000 at that time and is just under 30 miles away from the South Carolina-Georgia state line. Our central figure is Malakia Zali Logan, an 8-year-old African-American girl who goes by the name Kia. Kia was originally born to parents Richard Logan and Bernetta Logan Baylor on August 1, 1979, but it turned out that she had two holes in her heart. As a result, she was forced to undergo an operation to repair this issue when she was only 18 months old, but she managed to pull through. Kia's medical issues caused her to be smaller than usual, as by the time she reached the age of 8, she was only 4'2" and weighed only 50 pounds. But Kia was also known for being a happy, precocious kid who did well in school. When Kia was 5, her parents divorced, and her father Richard moved over 30 miles away to the town of Saluda, where he became the mayor. At this particular point, Kia and her 13-year-old sister Renee live with her mother Bernetta, who works as a junior high school teacher, though Kia often goes to visit her father on weekends and holidays. They all reside together in the Georgetown Apartments complex, which is located just outside the city limits of Greenwood. On the evening of Sunday, May the 15th, Kia and Renee went to a small park located on the west side of the apartment complex in order to play basketball on the court there with some friends. At around 8:15 p.m., Kia told her sister that she wanted to head home, but Renee decided to stay on the court for a little while longer. Kia then left on her bicycle, but even though her apartment was located only 300 yards away, she never arrived and was nowhere to be found when Renee returned home shortly before 8:30. However, Kia's abandoned bicycle was discovered near the apartment manager's office, which would have been about the halfway point on her route between the basketball court and her apartment. When Bernetta could not find Kia anywhere, she promptly contacted the Greenwood County Sheriff's Office in order to report her missing. Even though the apartment complex's pool and public areas had been crowded that evening, no witnesses recalled seeing or hearing anything unusual, and there were no fingerprints or any physical evidence on Kia's bicycle to point towards a potential abductor. Bernetta told the press that she had taught her daughter to stay away from strangers and not to wander away from home, so she feared that Kia had become the victim of a kidnapping. She also made a call to her ex-husband Richard to check if he might have taken Kia, but that turned out not to be the case. An extensive search effort would be performed for Kia, which involved both the Greenwood County Sheriff's Office and the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, but even though they performed a door-to-door search of the Georgetown apartments and utilized helicopters to check the area, they failed to turn up any trace of her. During the early stages of the investigation, law enforcement announced that they were looking for two unidentified men seen in the area inside some parked vehicles around the time of Kia's disappearance. One of them was a white male with graying hair who had been seen inside a blue van near the Georgetown apartments, but he was eventually tracked down and ruled out as a suspect, as he apparently had a legitimate reason for being in the area that night. However, multiple witnesses reported seeing a white male inside a faded dark blue or black 1970s model Chevrolet Monte Carlo, which had been parked near the basketball court shortly before Kia went missing. He was described as being around 35 to 40 years of age, with a pockmarked face and brownish blonde hair with sun streaks. Two separate sketches of the man were produced and circulated based on the descriptions of two separate eyewitnesses who had seen him from the side. But they were eventually combined into a single sketch with a frontal view of the man, which prominently showcased his distinctive pockmarked face. Even though investigators did not consider him to be a suspect, they still wanted to track the man down and question him, but he was never identified. When Kia could not be found, the Malakia Zali Logan Reward Fund was established, and it would be paid out to anyone who provided information which led to her recovery. A number of local residents donated to the reward fund, and money was also raised in Saluda County, where Kia's father lived. While the total amount of the reward fund wound up reaching over $20,000, it did not lead to a resolution. In September of that year, Kia's case returned to the spotlight for a very unusual reason when Lillian Lee, a 39-year-old former bank teller supervisor at the South Carolina National Bank in Greenwood, went on trial for embezzlement. Lee had been caught embezzling around $130,000 from the bank, but when she testified at trial, she claimed that she had only stolen the money because an unidentified extortionist had periodically threatened the lives of herself and her children if she did not pay him. In fact, she even went so far as to say that this extortionist might have been the same man responsible for the disappearance of Kia Logan. But in the end, no one believed Lee's story, as the authorities never found any evidence to indicate that this so-called extortionist actually existed. Lee was ultimately found guilty of embezzlement and investigators discounted any connection between the two cases. In December, it was announced that investigators were looking into possible connections between Kia's disappearance and the abduction of 9-year-old Michaela Gericht, who was kidnapped outside a market in Hayward, California on November the 19th. A friend of Michaela's who witnessed the abduction described the perpetrator as being a white male in his early 20s who drove away in an older model cream-colored 4-door sedan. Investigators thought there were enough similarities between the sketch of Michaela's abductor and the man seen near the basketball court to explore the possibility that they might be the same person, but no real link could be found between the two cases, and the idea was dismissed. Of course, in December of 2020, it was announced that a convicted murderer named David Misch was charged with Michaela's murder, even though her remains have still not been found. At the time of this recording, Misch has yet to go on trial for the crime, and I see nothing to indicate that he has ever been considered a suspect in Kia's case. Of course, Michaela Gericht's abduction was profiled on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries shortly after she went missing, and in January of 1990, Kia's story would receive some national exposure when she was briefly featured on the show. A segment was produced about the 1988 disappearance of 19-year-old Tara Calico, and it concluded with a roll call that displayed the photographs of a couple of missing children, including Kia. The segment did bring in one new tip from a viewer who thought they recognized Kia as a girl they had seen attending a school in Ohio, but when investigators checked out this lead, the girl turned out not to be her. Well, on October the 1st of that year, there would be a major development when a deer hunter came across a skull lying on the ground in some underbrush next to a fence in a wooded area in Newberry County. This spot was just off Mount Pleasant Road on property owned by the U.S. Forest Service and approximately 35 miles east of Greenwood. While it seemed apparent that the skull belonged to a child, a search of the area failed to turn up any additional remains. It was theorized that after the victim decomposed, animals may have scattered the bones, but since there was no obvious sign of trauma to the skull, investigators were unable to determine the exact cause of death. An anthropologist from the University of South Carolina estimated that the skull belonged to an African-American girl who was approximately 6 to 8 years old, and he believed that the skull had been out in the elements for at least 2 years before it was found. Of course, these details caused immediate speculation that the skull might belong to Kia, but these were the days when DNA testing was still in its infancy, and not even the use of dental records could provide a positive identification. The first attempt at DNA testing occurred in 1993, when the skull was sent to the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., but the results were inconclusive. 3 years later, mitochondrial DNA testing was performed on the skull at a genetics lab in North Carolina, and when compared to DNA samples taken from Kia's parents, the results seemed to be consistent. However, it was not until 1998, 10 years after Kia went missing, when DNA testing was performed on the skull at an FBI lab, and this proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that it belonged to her. Well, even though this information had not yet been released to the public, it turned out that a potential suspect had already popped up on the radar 2 years before the identification of Kia's skull. Investigators would spend a total of 6 years gradually making an attempt to build a case against this individual, and on November the 6th, 2002, it was finally announced that a 50-year-old suspect named Charles Wade Hampton had been charged with 4 separate offenses in relation to Kia's case: murder, kidnapping, criminal sexual conduct with a minor, and assault with intent to commit criminal conduct. Hampton had an extensive criminal history, which included being charged with attempting to rape his stepdaughter in 1981, though the charge wound up being pleaded down to simple battery after the victim refused to testify. Hampton lived a transient lifestyle and usually did not stay in one place for very long, but he was residing at a trailer park in Watkinsville, Georgia with his girlfriend when he first became a suspect in Kia's case in August of 1996. Hampton had been an employee for the Georgia Department of Transportation who performed maintenance work at a rest stop at Hard Labor Creek State Park in Morgan County. However, it turned out he was using his position to drill holes into the wall of the women's restroom there so he could spy on them from an adjacent storage room and he wound up being arrested on felony Peeping Tom charges. Once Hampton was in custody, investigators started exploring the possibility that he was responsible for the abduction of six young girls, which took place in South Carolina and Georgia from July of 1995 until August of 1996. Two of the South Carolina abductions occurred in Richland County near Columbia, while the other one happened in the town of Casey in Lexington County, whereas two of the Georgia abductions took place in the small town of Porterdale, with the remaining one occurring in Conyers, a suburb of Atlanta. The victims were all between the ages of 5 and 9, with 4 of them being black and 2 being white. They all lived in housing located near Interstate 20, and in each case, they were abducted by an unidentified man who later dropped them off in public places. While 4 of the girls were sexually assaulted, 2 of them simply remained in the abductor's vehicle for a period of time while he drove around before he released them unharmed. The general description the survivors provided of their assailant were very similar, as they said he was a middle-aged white male, though they did share varying descriptions of the abductor's hair, as some said it was salt and pepper colored, while others said it was blonde. And while 2 of the girls said that he drove a gold compact car, possibly a Toyota or Nissan, the other 4 described his car as being a full-size white Chrysler or Dodge. In spite of this, investigators were still inclined to believe that all 6 abductions were committed by the same man, who may have changed his hairstyle and vehicle at some point. Well, shortly after Hampton was arrested on the Peeping Tom charges, he confessed to being responsible for these abductions and apparently shared some details about the crime which were not public knowledge. At the time, Hampton was driving a white 4-door 1986 Dodge, and he was known for frequently cycling through numerous cars, which could have accounted for why some of the survivors provided different descriptions of different vehicles, and he was also known for changing the style and color of his hair. It wasn't long before Hampton gradually started being hit with additional charges related to 3 of the abductions, including kidnapping, aggravated molestation, aggravated sodomy, and first-degree criminal sexual conduct with a minor. These charges were filed in Richland County, South Carolina, in relation to the abduction and assault of a 9-year-old in December of 1995 and a 5-year-old in June of 1996, as well as Newton County, Georgia, for the abduction and assault of a 6-year-old in Porterdale in June of 1996. DNA was extracted from evidence which had been left behind on 3 of the victims' clothing and skin, including semen and hairs, and after testing was performed, the results showed that the DNA belonged to the same individual, confirming that one man had been responsible for all 3 assaults. But to everyone's surprise, the DNA did not match Hampton, so in November of 1996, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation announced that all the charges filed against him in relation to the assault in Newton County would be dropped. They expressed their suspicion that while Hampton may not have committed the abductions, he may have known the identity of the individual who did, and this person shared details about the crimes with Hampton. This knowledge could have allowed Hampton to make a convincing false confession, but his defense attorney argued that he only did this because he was mentally ill. Regardless, Hampton would still plead guilty to the original Peeping Tom charges in Morgan County and received a 5-year prison sentence. The charges against Hampton for the 2 assaults in Richland County were also eventually dropped due to lack of evidence, but they decided to file obstruction of justice charges against him for falsely confessing to the assault of the 5-year-old in June of 1996 and interfering with the investigation. After pleading guilty to that offense, Hampton received an additional 8-year prison sentence, which would run concurrently with his sentence on the Peeping Tom charges. While investigators believed that Hampton may have been responsible for other crimes and started looking at him as a potential suspect in the murder of Kia Logan, he just happened to match the description of the unidentified man seen in the Monte Carlo shortly before Kia went missing, as he would have been in the approximate age range at that time, and he even had a pockmarked face. For over 3 years, Greenwood County prosecutors attempted to build up a case against Hampton and were prepared to file murder charges during the summer of 2000, but they elected not to do so, since he was still incarcerated for the Peeping Tom charges in Georgia. Filing charges against Hampton at that time would have activated an interstate agreement between Georgia and South Carolina, requiring him to be brought to trial within 180 days. Instead, the authorities waited for Hampton to finish serving his 5-year sentence in Georgia, and he was subsequently extradited to the South Carolina Department of Corrections in order to complete his 8-year sentence on the obstruction of justice charge from Richland County. After having some time shaved off this sentence for good behavior, Hampton was finally released on November the 3rd, 2002, before he was immediately rearrested and taken to the Lexington County Detention Center. This time, Hampton was hit with all new charges in relation to the abduction of a 7-year-old girl in Casey in July of 1995. While this was one of the 6 abductions which Hampton had originally been suspected of, the key difference here is that this girl had been released unharmed without being assaulted, so there was no DNA evidence to prove that Hampton could not have committed this crime. 3 days after his arrest, a Greenwood County grand jury finally indicted Hampton with a number of new charges in relation to Kia's death, including murder. The state then announced that they would seek the death penalty if Hampton was convicted at trial. Well, much like his previous arrest for the abductions, Hampton initially confessed to being responsible for killing Kia, but he eventually recanted and would enter a plea of not guilty. Well, for the next 4.5 years, Hampton would remain in jail awaiting trial, but on June the 22nd, 2007, the state announced that they had no choice but to drop all charges against him related to Kia's murder. Even though Hampton had initially confessed to the crime, investigators had been unable to find any corroborating evidence to prove he was responsible. What further complicated the situation is that while he was incarcerated, Hampton had decided to confess to some additional murders, with one of them taking place in Columbia, South Carolina, and one or two others taking place in Georgia. No specific details about these crimes have ever been released publicly, but it's been reported that DNA testing ruled out Hampton as being responsible for at least one of the murders from Georgia, which casts further doubt on the credibility of his confessions. Eighth Circuit solicitor Jerry Peace, who made the decision to drop the charges against Hampton, told the press, quote, "Reading his statement, you'd think that only the person who did that would know those details. Maybe he did it, maybe he didn't, but we can't prove it," end quote. While I haven't seen this officially clarified by any sources, I also have to assume that the kidnapping charges filed against Hampton for the abduction of the girl in Casey in 1995 also got dropped at some point. For falsely confessing to Kia's murder, Hampton was once again charged with obstruction of justice, and after pleading guilty, he received an additional 8-year prison sentence. But since he had already been incarcerated for 4.5 years since his arrest in 2002, that would count as time served. It was assumed that Hampton would likely get additional time shaved off for good behavior, meaning that he'd only have to remain behind bars for a few more years. I have no idea how much time Hampton ultimately served, but even though I'm sure he was released, I could not find any information about this online, and I have no idea of his current whereabouts. Investigators did announce that the door was open to charge Hampton with Kia's murder again if new evidence surfaced, and if he is still alive today, he would be 72 years old at the time of this recording. In 2009, the Malakia Logan Memorial Scholarship was established at Lander University in Greenwood, and it's annually paid out to education or nursing majors attending the institution. While the initial scholarship started out as a $2,000 donation, Kia's family and the Greenwood County Sheriff's Office realized that the $20,000 from the Malakia Zolly Logan Reward Fund had never been paid out, so they decided to contribute it towards the scholarship. Since the charges against Hampton were dropped, there do not appear to have been any new developments in the investigation, so the murder of Malakia Logan continues to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So I've covered a lot of cases on this podcast involving missing and murdered children, And while all of them are tragic, the ones that disturb me the most are when the child is seemingly abducted in a split second and no one sees anything. That's exactly what happened to Malakia Logan as she was in the midst of making a brief 300-yard trip to her apartment before she vanished without a trace, and all that was found was her abandoned bicycle. But even though this was a busy apartment complex and a number of people were outdoors that evening, none of them reported seeing or hearing anything unusual. In addition, it was only about 15 to 20 minutes before Kia's mother noticed she was missing and called the police, and you really can't fault the original investigation at all, as they immediately took her disappearance very seriously and launched a search effort, but they just had virtually no evidence to work with. Even when Kia's skull was discovered in a wooded area over 2 years later, it still didn't shed any light on what actually happened to her. What makes Kia's story even more heartbreaking is that she was a girl who had to overcome a number of challenges in her life since she was born with two holes in her heart that required surgery at a very young age. But by all accounts, she grew up into a very bright, vibrant child who was doing very well for herself before her future was stolen away from her. Given the lack of evidence and eyewitnesses who heard anything, you might be wondering if Kia wasn't forcibly abducted, but rather voluntarily climbed into a vehicle with someone who later killed her. However, her mother was adamant that Kia was very timid around strangers and never would have gone off alone with someone she did not know, and it certainly wouldn't make much sense for her to do so when she was so close to her apartment. While I suppose that Kia could have been kidnapped by someone she knew and trusted, no one from her personal life ever popped up on the radar as a potential suspect, and the individual who later became the prime suspect definitely had no connection to her. So I think it's safe to say that whoever murdered Kia is incredibly lucky to have gotten away with it for this long. Since all that was ever found of Kia was her skull, we still don't know her exact cause of death, but the most logical theory is that she was abducted by a predator who subsequently killed her, and then drove over 30 miles to Newberry County in order to dispose of her body. She may not have been dumped at the spot where her skull was discovered, as it's possible that animals scattered her remains and carried her skull there. There's been speculation that Kia's death might be connected to the abduction and sexual assault of a number of girls which took place in South Carolina and Georgia during the mid-1990s, but in those cases, the perpetrator left the girls alive and let them go. If the same person responsible for those crimes also murdered Kia, it's possible that he was originally planning to let Kia go after he sexually assaulted her, but then something went horribly wrong, which led to her being killed. For over a decade, there were very few promising leads in this case, until Charles Wade Hampton was charged with Kia's murder, but that obviously didn't pan out, and after more than 35 years, it sounds like the investigation is right back to square one. Now, as for Charles Wade Hampton, he is definitely one of the most unusual and enigmatic suspects I've ever seen in one of the cases I've covered, and I'm honestly not sure what to make of him. I have no doubt that he's a terrible person who has done some bad things, as, at the very least, we know that he drilled holes into the wall of a women's restroom in order to spy on them. But the actual extent of his crimes is still unclear, because even though he has been charged with such offenses as murder, kidnapping, and criminal sexual conduct with a minor, he has never actually been convicted of any of these offenses. Hell, even when he was charged with sexually assaulting his stepdaughter in 1981, he technically only got convicted on the lesser charge of simple battery. Hampton has served time in prison on Peeping Tom and obstruction of justice charges, and while that's still pretty troubling, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's a murderer. If Hampton is a sexual predator who has abducted, assaulted, and even murdered children, then he's damn lucky that he has somehow been able to avoid spending the rest of his life behind bars. I'll reiterate that even though Hampton once made a confession to being responsible for Kia's murder, there is no direct evidence linking him to the crime, but he has technically not been ruled out as a suspect either, and could theoretically be charged with murder again if new evidence were to surface. The main reason Hampton popped up on the radar as a suspect to begin with is because he was believed to be responsible for the abduction of six girls in South Carolina and Georgia in 1995 and 1996, as all of these victims were in Kia's age range and four of them were black. But it sounds like the investigation into these crimes has caused nothing but confusion and complications and only muddied the waters. To recap, these six abductions all took place between July of 1995 and August of 1996, and while four of the girls were sexually assaulted, two of them involved the perpetrator driving around with the victim for a while before releasing her unharmed. At least three of the assaults had DNA evidence which showed that the same perpetrator was responsible, but when the evidence was compared to Hampton's DNA, it did not match. When you look through the original media coverage of this story, it's apparent that investigators were left absolutely shocked by these results, as one spokesman described the development as being like a quote-unquote 2x4 hitting us between the eyes. They were absolutely certain that Hampton had to be the guy, since he apparently gave very detailed descriptions of these crimes during his confessions and revealed information that only the perpetrator should have known. This has led to speculation that even if Hampton did not personally commit these abductions, he may have known the identity of the real perpetrator and learned all these details from them. But this theory has never been conclusively proven, so it's possible that Hampton may simply love confessing to crimes he did not commit, either for attention or to earn special privileges. Hampton's original defense attorney told the press that his client falsely confessed because he was mentally ill, but since we don't know all that much about his background, I really can't say if that's true. What further complicates this whole situation is that even though DNA testing ruled out Hampton as a suspect in three of these abductions, he technically wasn't cleared in all of them. Remember, in two of these cases, the victim was released without being assaulted, meaning that there was no DNA evidence to make a comparison. In fact, Hampton was even charged with one of these abductions, so he could be held in South Carolina while the authorities sought a murder indictment against him, but even that charge did not stick. I know that the six victims gave varying descriptions of their abductor's vehicle and hair color, but since Hampton was known for changing cars and hairstyles over the years, this could mean that he was still responsible for some of these crimes, just not the ones where the DNA did not match. Of course, since all the crimes took place 7 or 8 years after Kia's abduction and murder, do they conclusively prove or disprove anything about Hampton's alleged involvement in her death? Well, obviously, since all that was found of Kia was her skull, there is no DNA evidence to work with here. It's not like Greenwood County authorities spared any effort to build a murder case against Hampton, as he was in jail for 4.5 years before they decided to drop the charges. Even though Hampton did confess to killing Kia and apparently provided enough details to suggest he was telling the truth, the issue is that while he was in custody, he confessed to some additional murders from South Carolina and Georgia, but DNA testing ruled him out as being responsible for at least one of them. I think this pretty much demonstrated that Hampton went to the Henry Lee Lucas School of False Confessions, and without any other corroborating evidence linking him to Kia's murder, I can understand why the authorities were reluctant to take him to trial. So where does this leave us? Well, even though the DNA evidence from three of these crimes did not match Hampton, they did match each other, which proves that there was a serial predator who was abducting and raping young girls in South Carolina and Georgia during the mid-1990s. And even though we now have genetic genealogy, I haven't heard anything about the DNA from these crimes being matched to anyone, so this predator is still unidentified. Of course, if he could be identified, I would love for investigators to look at him as a potential suspect in Kia's murder. Even though these crimes took place 7 to 8 years later, they were not that far from Greenwood, which is in fairly close proximity to the South Carolina-Georgia state line. From day one, investigators have always had suspicions about the unidentified white male in the dark-colored 1970s model Chevrolet Monte Carlo, who was seen near the basketball court on the night of Kia's disappearance. While the six girls who were abducted gave descriptions of a variety of different vehicles, none of them mentioned a Monte Carlo. But that may not mean anything because a number of years had passed, so the perpetrator could have easily changed vehicles during that time period, and b, we technically can't be 100% certain that the driver of the Monte Carlo was responsible for abducting Kia. But it's definitely not unreasonable to assume that Kia's killer could have been responsible for at least some of the abductions during the 1990s, since the victims were all in Kia's age range and four of them were black. At the time he was arrested in 1996, Hampton was living in Watkinsville, Georgia, which is nearly 90 miles west of Greenwood, but since he was known for living a transient lifestyle, I'm not sure if investigators were able to determine his whereabouts in 1988. Whatever the case, the general consensus seems to be that Kia's killer was not living in the Greenwood area at that time and may have just been passing through and targeted Kia at random. If Kia was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time and her abductor never returned to Greenwood, then that would explain why no one has ever been able to identify him. Hampton does match the description of the man seen in the Monte Carlo and would have been in the correct age range, and he also had a pockmarked face. However, if you look at the original composite sketch of this guy, the pockmarking is so prominent that the sketch almost looks cartoonish, and from the photos I've seen of Hampton, I wouldn't say that his pockmarking is that distinct. But are there any other compelling alternate suspects besides Hampton? Well, sadly, just 4 months after Kia's disappearance, Greenwood would experience another unthinkable tragedy. On September 26, 1988, 19-year-old James William Wilson Jr. entered Oakland Elementary School and proceeded to open fire with his maternal grandmother's .22-caliber revolver. His shooting spree wound up taking the lives of 2 8-year-old girls, Shaquilla Bradley and Tequila Thomas, and wounded 7 other students and 2 teachers. After Wilson pled guilty to the crime, he would be sentenced to death, but due to his extensive history of mental illness, his attorneys have continually appealed his sentence and argued that he was legally insane when he did the shooting and was not responsible for his actions. As a result, Wilson's execution has never gone through and he is still on death row over 35 years later. Well, in June of 1989, it was reported that following his incarceration, Wilson had made no less than 3 separate confessions to killing Kia Logan. The first confession involved him sending a letter from the Greenwood County Jail in which he claimed to have kidnapped and shot Kia before leaving her body near an auto store in Lincolnton, Georgia. Sometime later, Wilson had a phone conversation with a reporter from the Columbia-based newspaper The State, in which he changed his story and said that while he was present when Kia was murdered, another man, who was serving a prison sentence for criminal sexual conduct at that point, was actually the one who killed her. He would also send a letter to the Greenville News in which he changed his story again and now claimed that he murdered Kia and left her body in Newberry County. While investigators questioned Wilson and performed a search of his family's property, they found no evidence to link him to Kia's case. Wilson even admitted that he fed false information to the reporter from The State as revenge for an article he had previously published about him, so the authorities completely discounted his confessions. However, Wilson did go on to make a 4th confession to investigators several years later, and in 2005, Charles Wade Hampton's public defender requested that Wilson submit to a videotaped deposition so that he could be looked at as an alternate suspect in Kia's murder. I'm not sure if this deposition was ever taken, but since the charges were later dropped against Hampton anyway, I doubt this angle went anywhere, and investigators still stood by their belief that Wilson was not a suspect in this crime. Well, I'll just say it's horrible that Greenwood, a town of only about 20,000 people, would be forced to experience the abduction and murder of a child and a school shooting within 4 months of each other. But these crimes are just so different that I have no reason to believe that Wilson was responsible for what happened to Kia. It was established that prior to the shooting, Wilson had a documented history of violence and had developed an obsession with mass murders, but I see nothing to indicate that he was a sexual predator with an interest in young girls. Mass shooters usually have no expectations that they will get away with it, whereas whoever abducted Kia did so covertly and went to the trouble of driving over 30 miles in order to dispose of her body. I don't see someone like Wilson having the wherewithal to commit a crime like that without leaving any evidence behind, and given his history of mental health issues, I have no trouble believing that he would falsely confess to a crime he did not commit once he was incarcerated and knew he had nothing left to lose. When Hampton's public defender asked for a videotaped deposition from Wilson all those years later, I think he was just grasping at straws in an attempt to divert suspicion away from his client, because I find it very unlikely that Wilson was responsible for this. But when Hampton's attorney made this request, he did bring up an interesting point when he stated that Hampton's confession to Kia's murder was no more accurate than Wilson's. As an example, he claimed that one detail which Hampton shared that turned out to be inaccurate was when he said that Kia's body had been buried, even though her skull was found out in the open. So it is possible that, much like Wilson, Hampton decided to falsely confess to a crime he did not commit. But at this point, there really doesn't seem to be anything that conclusively proves or disproves his involvement. Obviously, there was probably a lot going on behind the scenes in this case which the public was not privy to, but the authorities kept Hampton incarcerated for 4.5 years before they dropped the murder charges against him. So if they had been able to find any evidence which made their case strong enough to take Hampton to trial, I'm sure they would have. Their decision to drop the charges was definitely the correct one, as they only had one shot at a conviction, and if the trial had ended in a not guilty verdict, they never would have been able to prosecute him again. But unfortunately, it's been nearly 17 years since this decision was made, and we don't even know Hampton's current whereabouts or if he's even still alive. And if he is still with us, Hampton would now be 72 years old, so time is running out to pin the murder on him if he is in fact the guilty party. I honestly have mixed feelings about Hampton being the perpetrator, because while I'm sure he has likely been responsible for more crimes than he was convicted of, he has also made so many false confessions that I have a hard time figuring out what to make of this guy. If Hampton is not actually the perpetrator, then I can only hope that whoever did this has since gone to prison for something else and is no longer a danger to society. We are talking about a murder without eyewitnesses, DNA, or physical evidence, so trying to conclusively solve it after all these years will be a challenge, but if there's anyone out there who knows anything, coming forward might finally help the authorities bring the case to a resolution. So if you happen to have any information about the murder of Malakia Logan, please contact the Greenwood County Sheriff's Office at 864-942-8600. That's 864-942-8600. You can also contact the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division at 803-737-9000. That's 803-737-9000. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now, the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past 6 years, our Patreon page has released nearly 70 exclusive bonus episodes, which are all currently available in our archives for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3. This past month, I released a bonus episode about a wanted fugitive named Carl Alfred Etter, who was convicted of the murders of a mother and her 4 children when he was only 16 years old, but wound up escaping from prison in 1974 and has not been seen since. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my 2 co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, cover another memorable case from Unsolved Mysteries, the 1988 disappearance of Elizabeth Campbell. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries, and we now have over 60 of these commentary tracks in our archives. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Daniel, Susie G, and David W. Thank you all so much for your support. I wanted to remind everyone that later this year, The Trail Went Cold will be returning to the True Crime Podcast Festival, which is being held at the Denver Marriott Westminster Hotel in Colorado from July the 12th to the 14th. If you would like to purchase tickets, we have a discount code for 15% off, so please visit truecrimepodcastfestival.com and enter the promo code TRAIL. Once again, that's truecrimepodcastfestival.com, and the promo code is TRAIL for 15% off tickets. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the ear music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.